traveling man.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. We're at the bottom of Yud Amud Beis, the Mishnah, four lines from the bottom. This is our third Mishnah, I believe. So we've talked about the nighttime Shema, the daytime Shema, the hours of when you can start and end it. The third Mishnah is, what position are you in when you say them? Your physical position. So Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai says, Bo'erev, at the nighttime, when you say the nighttime Shema, call Adam Yatev Yikra. Every person must first lie down and then recite the Shema. Oh. You lie down on your side. Let's say when you're reclining. We'll see later on why you're not allowed to lie down on your back or on your stomach. So you lie down on your side, and then you read the nighttime Shema. We're not talking about the bedtime Shema. We're talking about the nighttime Shema. Not the bedtime Shema. The nighttime Shema. Remember, it's an independent mitzvah from Maariv. Okay? But you have to say it lying down. Ubaboker, in the morning, when you say the morning time, Yamod, you got to stand while saying the Shema. Now, the reason why you guys aren't familiar with this is because we don't hold like Beis Shammai. Okay, that's why I never heard of that.
We do the opposite. We sit in the morning, stand in the evening.
How do we know this? Because he says that's what the pasuk says. Shinemar, the pasuk says, the source for saying the Shema and the time is Uv Shach Becha, when you lie down, Uv Komecha, when you arise. So he's saying, the Torah is telling us that's not only when, but how you say it. You say it when you lie down, and you say it when you get up. Beis Hillel disagrees with this, and we rule like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Omrim, Kol Adam Koire Kedarko. Every person reads the Shema according to his preferred manner, whatever way he wants, whether he's standing, lying, sitting, walking. You could say the Shema anyway. How do we know that? Shemamar, let's look at the next two words in the pasuk there. Uvishach b'cha v'kumecha. What's the next two words? Uvalechtecha v'aderech. And while you go on the way. So if you're saying the Shema while you're going on the way. And even so, you don't have to be lying or standing. But you could do it lying. You could be standing. Could be on your way.
Could you be driving in your car?
Well, that's going to be, we'll have to see. We'll get to some Mishnais that will be relevant to that idea. We'll get to that. So wait a minute, if that's the case, Imkain, once it says, as you go on your way, any way you want to do it, why does it have to say, which seems to say, while you're lying down and while you get up? Why do you need that? If you already have, which means any way you go, so what do I need while you lie down, when you get up? The answer is because those words are not telling me how to do it, but when to do it. At the time where people are lying down, the time where people are getting up. It's not talking about your position at all. So this is the big machlokas, Beisil Beis Shammai. How do we interpret? Beis Shammai says it's telling me what position to be in when you say it. Beis Hillel saying what time you should be saying it. Now we have a story that shows you it's not a good idea to follow Beis Shammai's position. Amar Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon relates a falling incident that happened to him. Ani hayisi baba derech. I was once going on the road, and it was time for the nighttime Shema. So while it was nightfall and I was on the road, vehitesi likros kidiv Beis Shammai, and I lied down at the side of the road to say the Shema like Beis Shammai says. Vesikanti atzmi v'delisim, and my life was in danger because of bandits. Okay, in other words, they were going to attack me, per se. And it doesn't tell us more detail about that. Some are saying he put his life in danger or whatever. So the rabbis responded, Amrullah, they said for him, Kedai ha'yisi locha v'chatzma, had they attacked you, it would be fitting for you to be harmed by them.
What?
And to be killed. Why? Shavart al dir Beis Hillel, because you went against the words of Beis Hillel. And we already know You have to follow Beis Hillel. There was a famous Gemara in Erevin that tells us that we're supposed to hold like Beis Hillel. So when you go like Beis Shammai, that's not going according to the way that Jews are supposed to follow. And therefore, if something were to happen to you, you'd have blood on your own head. It would be your own fault. All right, so that clearly is telling us that the ruling is like Beis Hillel. Going up to the top now of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. Now the Gemara is going to now get into the details of Hillel and Shammai's positions over here. Especially Beis Shammai's needs a bit of explanation. Bishlema Beis Hillel, very good Beis Hillel. I understand how they've explained all the psukim because Kamafar Shetamayu. They've elucidated both Tamayu, their reasonings, and also the time of Beis Shammai. And they've explained Beis Shammai's reasonings. Okay? Now, the point being, when the Mishnah explains Beis Hillel, right? Beis Hillel explains the source of their ruling. They say, V'lech t'chov aderech, as you go on the way, and they acknowledge that Beis Shammai says, U'v'shach b'chov mecha means in the lying or standing position. They disagree, and they say, no, at the time when you lie, the time you sit. So Beis Hillel has fully explained their position and in what area they differ with Beis Shammai. But Beis Shammai didn't give us the full understanding. Why? Ela Beis Shammai, my time alo, Amrika Beis Hillel. Why does Beis Shammai not hold like Beis Hillel? In other words, why don't they want to interpret lying down and getting up, meaning at that time, which is much simpler way of discussing it. It's much simpler and more obvious interpretation. And what do they do with Uvalech Techov Aderech? Beis Hillel says, Uvalech Techov, as you go on the way, whatever way you're going. So how do they understand that? So, in other words, so why did you not learn, if I would have asked you to say, you say the Shema, Uvalech Techov Aderech, the simpler meaning means you say it at the time you go to sleep and the time you get up. That's a simple meaning. Beis Shammai, what's forcing you to say a pshat that's not the simple understanding to say you say the Shema at night while you're lying down, and then you say the Shema as you're in a lying down position, and you say in the morning a staying up position? What's forcing you to learn it not the simple way? That Beis Shammai has not explained. Shamalach Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai will explain it now. Because let's think about this. If the Torah wanted to say, you say the Shema at night and in the day, what's the simplest way to say it?
Say it at night. Say it in the day.
That's right. Imkay, name a crow. Why didn't the Pasuk say, Baboker Berev? In the morning and at night. Or the night and the morning, whatever. Just say. You say it.
Simpler way to say.
You just say it. You say it. Baboker v'erev. My, why does the Torah say v'shach b'chav v'kumecha? Why is it saying when you lie down and when you arise? Right. So must be it's telling you more. V'pishah shchiv, it's saying at the time when you actually are lying down. Shchiv mamish. You have to mamish lie down. That must be the only reason why the Torah wrote that. Uvishas kima, and at the time when you get up, kima mamish, you have to mamish get up. That's why it's saying as you lie down, as you get up, because that's part of the way you're going to do this. So that's a good question. So now, we still not finished. What's Beis Shammai going to do with the Velech to Chavaderech as you go on your way? That's where Hillel learned in any way you go, any way you do it is fine. Beis Shammai. Okay, now what about Beis Shammai? What are you going to do with the words going on the way? And that's how Beis Hillel learned, no matter what position you have understood it. Look at it. We have generally translated the words v'shiftecha b'veisecha uv'lechtecha b'derech idiomatically as while you sit in your home and while you're on the way. The stricter literal translation of this phrase, however, is during your sitting in your home and during your going on the way. More here, we have translated the verse according to its literal meaning in accordance with a forthcoming exposition that Seth is going to explain. Anyway, what are you going to do with it? Beis Shammai, what are you going to do with Uvalech Techov Aderech? So it says like this. Ha'umi Ba'ilahu, we need to look at a Tanya for the following lesson that a Brisa teaches us. A Brisa looks at those words, so these four words. While you're sitting in your home, what's the insight of sitting in your home? Prat, to exclude la'asuk b'mitzvah, to a fellow who's engaged in a mitzvah, that if you're engaged in a mitzvah, that's taking up your time. You don't have to say the Shema.
Meshivtecha, resting. Uvelechtecha
v'aderech. And as you go on your way, what's that for the brides? Prat l'chasen, to exclude a bridegroom who's preoccupied with the thought of doing his mitzvah of being intimate with his wife in the midst of procreation. And he's very concerned to be able to consummate the marriage. So he can't concentrate properly on the Shema. So we'll see, more, we got more to explain, though. Now, it's interesting, although a bridegroom's exemption from recitation of Shema is due to his preoccupation with mitzvah, it cannot be derived from the general exclusion of those occupied with mitzvah. So you'd ask, once you've excluded a guy doing a mitzvah, then what do you need a second drasha for? Verse guy is an exclusive verse on its own. Why? Since the verse of during your sitting in your home does not state its exclusion explicitly, but leaves it to be exegetically divined, one might assume that only one presently occupied with the actual performance of the mitzvah is excluded, but not one mentally preoccupied with its eventual performance. A second verse is therefore needed to exclude even one whose state of mind does not allow him to properly concentrate upon the recitation, namely a bridegroom. In other words, it's not like this. You want to say, well, you know, if you're involved in a mitzvah, we're going to exclude you. Okay, what does that mean, involved in a mitzvah? There's two stages of involved in a mitzvah. There's the actual performance of the mitzvah, and then there's your mental preoccupation with how you're going to do the mitzvah.
He's not yet doing it.
I'm sure a lot of us, you know, have a certain degree of angst before Sukkot and before Pesach. Even they haven't actually done the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah. There's still, you're preoccupied with how we're going to cover if it rains and with this and that and all those things. You haven't done any mitzvah yet. Same thing, you know, getting ready for Pesach. How are we going to, you know, this and that and all these things. So for you need two clauses. You only have one clause and I'll be able to exclude the minimal amount, which would be doing the mitzvah, but not preoccupied mentally with the mitzvah. So therefore, and it's interesting, a bridegroom's exemption continues even beyond his wedding day until the marriage has been consummated, and we'll see later on, or until 3 days afterwards. Okay, yeah, well, it's all more of this guy. But anyway, that's how he learns it. The Brisa says that these are exclusionary. It's not coming to tell you can just read it any way you want to. Loi Beis Hillel learns it. These are exclusionary things. And the Brisa concludes, Mikan Amru, from these two exclusions we see, Hakones es Hapsula, one who's marrying a virgin, Potter, he's Potter from the Shema on the wedding night because he's very preoccupied with this. On the other hand, a fellow who's getting a second time around, Vesalmona, a fellow who's now marrying a widow, Chayiv, he has to read the Shema. Big difference. Why? That we'll see in a second. You'll see below for the reason for this distinction. He's going to say in a minute. So clearly, it's not telling us about the position to be in. Beis Hillel says, over left, over there, as you go on your way, anyway, any position. Beis Hashem saying, no, we need to exclude people engaged in mitzvah performance, actually or mentally. And therefore, uvishach b'cha, so really, Beis Shammai at this point makes a lot of sense. If you want to say in the morning and at night, it should have said Boker Ve'erev. Didn't say that. It says Shach L'chumecha. Must be as you're lying down, you say the nighttime Shema. As you're standing up, you say the daytime Shema. And then the next two words, V'lechtecha V'derech, V'shivtecha B'veisech, V'lechtecha V'derech, means when you're doing your personal things, excluding if you're doing mitzvahs that you're preoccupied with. Very good. Now, this last point, why are we saying that if you're marrying a widow, you still have to say the Shema? To which the Gemara now is going to ask the question, my mashma, how do you see the exclusion? How does the Brisa know to exclude someone doing a mitzvah from the words, uveshiftecha beveisecha? So, uvelechtecha vaderech. So, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says this is how, the way the Brisa understands it, ki derech, it's got to be comparable to the way. It says, on your way, right? Look what he says, which are seemingly superfluous, since the verse could have simply said, during your sitting in your home or during your going. It could have said, uvelechtecha, right? It could have said, why say baderach?
What's it adding?
Say ulecha, as you're going.
Yeah.
Or it could have said, right, when you're sitting in your home or during your going. What's this derech? So the word derech is telling you something important. Ma derech, just like a pathway. When you're going on a way, rishus, it's at your own discretion. You know, I'm going to decide to go to Sobeys. I'm going to decide to go here. I'm going to go there. So that's when you're obliged, when you're doing something like a derech, when you're going on a derech, which is discretionary. So I've called rishus. So too, with any activity, it gets interrupted for the Shema. Okay? Now we get this from this juxtaposition. It says, upon the way, with the phrase during your sitting and during your going, right, joining the two together. So anything that's, if it's discretionary, so then you have to say the Shema. But if it's not discretionary, which is what? A mitzvah. A mitzvah is not discretionary. You have to do it. That's not like derech. Derech means I'm going on my way. So on a way, so whatever way I'm going, you still have to interrupt and say the Shema. Wait a minute, but I can be going on a way. Milo askeda kazalot, but I can be going on a way to a mitzvah. Maybe it means I'm going on a way to a mitzvah, and I have to stop it even for that, because that's considered a way. Ve'afilo ha'achi and still in ma'al v'rach ma'al v'rach, the Torah says, go and say it. So wait a minute, Bishama, what, how's this price of making sense? It says, as you go on the way. Okay, a way is the way you want to go. So I'm going. Discretionary. Well, who says it's discretionary? Maybe even you're going to do a mitzvah. No. Here's where you get to the main point of the drasha. Im kein lechtov rachmana b'sheves uvaleches. It should have said when sitting uvaleches and when going. That would include any sitting and any going. My, why does it have the possessive b'shiftecha? When you're sitting, uvalechtecha, and when you are going, what's the your? What's the matter, your? Just say, when sitting and when going. The answer is, b'sheves etcha, when it's your sitting, uvalechtecha didach, and you're going, that's what you have to say, because that's your own personal self for your own wanting. Hum to mitzvah, when it's a mitzvah, that's not my going, it's Hashem telling me to go. Then you're poteris, that's when you are excluded. So this is how you read the pasuk. You read the pasuk, according to Beis Shammai, you read the pasuk as you are lying in the lying down position. You say it in the standing up position. You say it when you are sitting in your house for your own discretionary needs. When you're going anywhere with your own discretionary needs, to the exclusion of if you're doing a mitzvah or involved in thinking about a mitzvah, that's God's needs. So if you're really doing God's needs, you don't have to say the Shema. That's how Beis Shammai understands it. All right, there's one last problem. That Bryce says, wait a minute. When the bridegroom is marrying a virgin, he doesn't say the Shema. But when he's marrying a widow, he does say the Shema. So now the Gemara asks, if that's the case, that we're preoccupied and a mitzvah, if something excludes you, so how come when he marries the widow, he does say the Shema?
Yeah.
Right?
But problem there.
What's the difference? Because he's doing a mitzvah, why does it limit on to a virgin? So he said, when a guy's marrying a virgin, hi, Torah, this one is very preoccupied with the impending marriage, so he cannot concentrate on the Shema. Okay, what's going on? The Gemara now explains that it's reasonable to assume that the verse of the acceptance of the bridegroom is not due simply to his imminent performance of a mitzvah, but to his preoccupation with it. He's intent upon his impending marriage and cannot turn his concentration on the matter. He's therefore unable to recite the Shema with proper concentration. I'm marrying a widow, however, it's not preoccupied at all. It's pretty capable of attending both his marriage and to his obligation to recite the Shema. So it's not enough you're doing a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that preoccupies you. V'hai, but when he's marrying the widow, lo tari, he's not preoccupied. Why? Because the preoccupation is with intimacy with a virgin, is not the same issue as intimacy with a widow, for obvious reasons. Okay? It's not as... Remember, we're living in a world without premarital sex.
Yes.
So a woman who's not been with a man yet, it's not just, oh, well, let's just do it. There's a lot of... Well, you know, the things you got to be concerned with. A lot of pain, a lot of this, all these kinds of things. And the guy's very concerned with a whole number of things. So there's a lot of concern. The widow, there's much less of that to deal with.
Well, so the guy's much younger, inexperienced.
It's not the issue. It's not the same. So we seem to think that, oh, there's preoccupation here. One says, okay, wait a minute, if you're preoccupied, and wait a minute, maybe other things should be excluded. Maybe shouldn't tear the preoccupation. I feel a little tough. Says, so, but yeah, not, how about if his boat sinks? He's lost his parnassa? How can he be preoccupied with this? Right? So and if, so then let's say that should be another exemption too. So that's interesting. The one asking this question feels that a bridegroom's exemption is based not upon his performance of a mitzvah, but simply upon the fact he's preoccupied. So now he assumes in the question that one contradictory on one matter is generally incapable of turning his thoughts to another matter. One preoccupied with his forthcoming marriage therefore cannot properly concentrate the words of the Shema. Accordingly, even one preoccupied with a non-obligated matter should be exempt from the Shema because he can't concentrate. And then the Gemara, and therefore, and if you're going to say, yeah, you're right. So you're right, you wouldn't say when it's Shema. So wait a minute, that doesn't make sense because we know. So Aloma Rav Abba Bar Zava Rav. So why did Rav Abba Bar Zava Rav say that an Avel Chayv Kol Mitzvahs of Rav Torah? An Avel is Chayv in all mitzvahs. We're talking about the day right after Chutz Min HaTfilin, except for Tfilin. Okay, I'm not going Halacha L'Maisa. But we're talking about a certain state of avelus. But everything else he has to do. But tefillin not, because it's a special exclusion. She'inemar b'hem pe'er, because tefillin are called pe'er. It's called a glory. And we know, she'inemar pe'ercha chavosh alecha. And we see the pasuk says, it's a whole story over there. When Yechezkel's wife died, okay, Hashem wanted him to behave in a certain way. It's all part of his prophecy. So he was said, don't do the regular practices of a mourner. God gave him, for whatever reason, he says, when your wife dies, don't be like a regular mourner, such as going barefoot, a mourner goes barefoot or socks, whatever. So this is part of a prophecy detailing a Yechezkel's mourning. So things that are usually prohibited, he has to do. That's what it is. What's normally prohibited, you have to do. So now and he says, and put your tefillin on. Meaning what's normally prohibited, now you're going to do. So put your tefillin. So your wife's going to die, but certain mourning prayers you're not going to do. But what do we see then? All the things he wasn't supposed to, that Hashem said to do, means a normal mourner would do. So now, Rav Avraham Bar Zava teaches, this exemption applies only to tefillin. We do not draw an analogy from tefillin to exempt a mourner from other mitzvahs as well. So there's only tefillin referred to in Scripture as glory. It's not fitting for items so described to be affixed to the head of a mourner which is soiled with the dust of mourning. Nor is it proper for a mourner who ought to be in the depths of degradation to exalt himself to the dawning of glory. Other myths, however, are not termed glory. Their performance is therefore permitted to a mourner. We're not talking about the whole... Anyway, I'm not going halacha l'maisa. We're just saying the main point is a mourner has to do mitzvahs. That's the main point. So wait a minute. So if he's... He has to do mitzvahs, so how come, why is he having to say the Shema? He should be preoccupied, right? But we're saying he has to do all the mitzvahs, even the Shema. So the answer, so what's the difference? So now we come to a different, the Gemara now answers by drawing the distinction between the bridegroom and the mourner. Hasam torid tir to the mitzvah. In the place of the bridegroom marrying the virgin, he's experiencing the preoccupation of a mitzvah. He's preoccupied with doing a mitzvah, so he need not set aside the first mitzvah and concentrate the second mitzvah. So now it comes out, there's two things. He's preoccupied while doing a mitzvah. Right? Hacha, but over here, the mourner, taritir de rishus, he's experiencing a discretion nary preoccupation. He's sad. Being sad is not a mitzvah. That's the reality of life. So you're sad. Okay, you're sad. So if you're sad, okay, you still got to say the Shema. In other words, it's only when you're doing a mitzvah that preoccupies you. That's when the exemption is such. Therefore, it comes out like this. When you're a chassan, and you have to be doing a mitzvah with a virgin, that you're preoccupied, so it's a mitzvah that's preoccupying you, you're exempt from saying the Shema. And that's what these psukim are saying. If you're engaged in mitzvahs and are preoccupying you during and before, that exempts you. Your boat sinking may preoccupy you, it ain't a mitzvah. Being a mourner, you might be preoccupied, but it's not a mitzvah to be preoccupied, so you got to do the mitzvahs. So that's how everything's explained. So that's how he explains the psukim. So therefore, when you're going on the road, it's your road. When it's your discretionary things, you got to say the Shema. If it's not your road, but it's God's road of a mitzvah, that also preoccupies you. That's what the pasuk's excluding. So that all fits out. So that explains all. So his position is clear, and Beis Hillel's position is clear. They've all explained their facts. And Beis Hillel, we have to see. More doesn't go into this, but well, that's two more lines left to finish up this sugya. The next two lines are a little bit tricky. Okay, you'll see why. It seems to be just repeating over what it just said. So the Gemara above first stated that Beis Shammai derives the exemption of a bridegroom and one occupied with a mitzvah from the phrase upon the way. Gemara then abandoned this derivation and instead inferred this exclusion from the phrases during your sitting and during your going. According to the phrase upon the way is again rendered superfluous because it's your going. So what's the upon the way? Right? It's your sitting. So what do we need? And you're going. Uvalechtecha. So again, what do you need vaderech for? It's your sitting, you're going. So now the Gemara is going to say, Ubei Shammai and to Beis Shammai. So what about upon the way? Do we go upon the way? So, hahu mi boilahu, he's going to need that prat l'shluche mitzvah. He's going to exclude it for those who are sent to perform a mitzvah but are not yet actually involved in the performance. So you're sent to do a mitzvah. So that's also excluded from that. Now, that's what they're going to do. Beis Hillel, I mean, now we go back to Beis Hillel. Now it goes back to our dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. It explained above that since according to Beis Shammai, the verse, and during your going upon the way is needed to exempt a bridegroom and those sent to perform a mitzvah, it cannot be used to teach the inconsequentiality of the position where Shema is recited. Right? That's nothing left for that. But what of Beis Hillel, who do not employ this verse to permit recitation in various positions? From where do they derive these exemptions? In other words, where are you going to learn that if you're doing a mitzvah, you're exempt?
Somewhere else.
Where's that coming from? Beis Hillel Amri and Beis Hillel is going to say, Memelish Mamina, the Afilu B'dech Lamikari. They're going to say, we, as a matter of course, we may learn that even one traveling upon the way may do any way he needs it. In other words, we don't assume anything else. We don't have anything to exclude it, so why not? Since it says the Shema upon walking upon the way, so we can just learn that it's for that kind of things. Now, only for your things, and that's just like self-understood with that, which is a fine, kind of weird way to end the Gemara.
Right.
They don't need reshut, not reshut.
It's just, you know, we could learn that, you know, from traveling on the way, we recite the Shema as he walks. We don't have to assume any particular position, anything else than that. That's what the Gemara, again, you know, what do they do? But what of Beis Hillel? Who do employ this verse to permit reservation? Where do they derive these exemptions? So they say it's just obvious.
You can't
say I'm right. No, you say Mamela Shramina. You know, it's just a matter of course. We could learn that even traveling upon the way, you can recite it, and you don't have to assume anything else. So it's
sometimes derech means derech.
Kind of a weird answer, and doesn't really satisfy. There are some who omit these last two lines completely, but it's still a little bit challenging. You know, where is Beis Hillel really learning to deduce that you're exempt for your own private mitzvahs? You got a brisa, and it's just saying it's just, you know.
Do we hold by that?
We hold like all of us. So
what about the?
So we rule like Beis Hillel. You could say it in any position. We rule also that if you are very preoccupied with this particular mitzvah, you're exempt. However, that is in theory, that last halacha. Later on, there'll be a mishnah that says, since we don't concentrate on Shema anyway, even on a good day, that the Gemara's going to say that. Since on a good day, who's concentrating that much on the Shema? So you're such a big tzaddik that now that I'm marrying a virgin, oh, there's no way I can concentrate. I was like, as if to say, oh, I've been concentrating my whole life.
That's the implication.
And now because I do this, I can't concentrate. So that goes off by the boards. Okay, two dots. Perfect. Yes.
Okay. So Shema should be said with a lot of concentration.
Should be said with a lot of concentration. Okay.